This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another brand new edition of the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you as always for the next hour. You, of course, are tuned in live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're listening to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show, and of course you're doing that on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, each week I have the chance to visit with some of the folks that are such an integral part of making our sport a success. You know, we talk about this a lot, that, you know, without the owners, we don't have a sport. Without the bettors, we don't have a sport. Without the breeders, we don't have a sport. Well, without the trainers, we don't have a sport either. And today's guest has a great story. He works alongside his wife, Cheryl. They have been a team both on and off the track for 32 years. He joined me on February 6th on our Equine Forum program prior to their talented three-year-old Florida-bred Boca Boy starting in the Sam F. Davis Stakes at Tampa Bay Downs. And I enjoyed talking with him so much that I invited him to join me for an extended visit here today. Please join me in welcoming trainer Ken Weinbaugh to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Ken, thanks for the time.
No problem. My pleasure.
Yeah, appreciate the visit. You know, as I was getting ready for the show, I actually went back and listened to that interview we did on February 6th talking about Boca Boy. And, you know, the enthusiasm and excitement in your voice was, it just came through on the radio so well. You were so excited for that moment.
Yes, he's a nice colt. I really enjoy training him, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's very, very special. Of course, as we know, he didn't win that day. He finished fourth. He came back in the Tampa Bay Derby and finished eighth back on March 6th. Where does he go from now? What's next for Boca Boy?
Well, I have him nominated for the Florida Derby and the Cutler Bay on Saturday, but I don't think he's going to get to run in either one of them because after the Tampa Bay Derby, I checked his blood, and he has had some white blood suck. Count was the real low, so... And I've been trying to build him up since then, and I think he's going to have to miss the Florida Derby because of that. But I do have one a couple weeks later. His blood is looking much better, so hopefully we'll get to see him at Keeneland after the Bluegrass. There's one called the Stone Street Lexington. Mm-hmm. So hopefully if everything goes right, we'll get to see him in there.
So he's a horse that still has you thinking Kentucky Derby.
Well, yeah, I think we can pick up a few points here. Hopefully he could even win the race. So, yeah, and he's a very nice colt. I think he's good enough to win a graded stake. That's why we're going to continue on.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Never let the dream die, you know.
Never let the dream die.
And especially if you can see some problems that you can fix.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I can imagine for a trainer, Ken, especially as I mentioned, you were so enthusiastic and so upbeat before the Sam F. Davis, and you get a horse like this that you know has promise, that you know has talent, and something happens with, you know, that weird blood count, and it's almost like a gut punch, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because I thought he would really improve off of Sam F. David, even though he looked like he'd come up short. Yeah, he's doing really good and much better than he was after the, you know, for like 2 weeks after the Sam Davis, after the Derby, he was just not himself, and I could tell he wasn't quite right. So that's when I started running all the blood tests, and he's very sound, and thank goodness. And he wasn't acting like himself, so I knew there had to be something not quite right.
What do you think it was? Just an infection or something internally that just wasn't right?
Well, I'm thinking that maybe he had some ulcers that was kind of aggravating him a little bit. Maybe that's why he had a little inside bleeding or something in his stomach, and maybe that's why his blood count was low. So we've been getting him on some LifeGuard, GastroGuard medicine to help with the ulcers, and I think that's what it was. And in fact, that's all I can think of right now because everything else is coming out. You know, everything else is coming out good. So.
Yeah, I remember you telling me the story of how you came to get Boca Boy in your stable, and
yes.
You credited your assistant trainer, Joel Martinez.
Yes, he's a very young looking kid. He went to the Bo Hunt's farm and Bo Hunt called the agent. The agent was trying to sell him to me. He said, "Who was it?" 14-year-old kid that you sent down here to look at this horse. And I said, "Don't worry about the kid. He's a good kid. He's if he likes him, we'll buy him." And he looks like he's really young, but he's a really good kid. He's learning every day. He's like a sponge. He's trying to learn something every day. So he's going to be a good assistant trainer. He's going to be a good trainer of his own.
Didn't you tell me that his goal is to be a trainer one day?
Yes, that's his goal. Yeah.
Well, Ken, if that really is his goal and he wants to be a trainer, he couldn't have found two better teachers than you and your wife, Cheryl.
Yes, me and Cheryl, we love teaching him because he really wants to learn, and we're hands-on trainers. So I know we have to show him a little everything, but. We teach him how to check every horse every morning and make sure they eat good at night, because that's the main thing of training, is make sure they're nourishing good and they're truly training. That way we can train them better. The more they eat, the better we can train them. So that's the first thing he does every morning, that he goes out and makes sure everybody eats, and then everybody that walks out of the stall, he gets a feel of the legs, and we know what, if there's a problem, we find it right away. So, yeah, he's very good at he's catching on very fast. He's really a good kid.
How many other assistants have you had in the past that have gone on to their own training careers?
Well, no, he's the first one we've ever that's ever really wanted to learn to be a trainer from us. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Because we've always usually kept a really small stable until the last couple of years. We've grown to about 20-25 head. So. And we're getting more that needs to go to, like, stake races and run other places. We were based in Chicago there at Arlington and Hawthorne. Sometimes we have to send them to Indiana, so he'll get to start going over there when he gets to go to Tampa Bay when we send the horse to the Tampa. Or if he don't go, I'll go, and he'll go to Keeneland. Probably when we go to Keeneland, he'll take the horse to Keeneland himself this time.
You know, it's interesting. As you were talking about teaching Joel and him being the very first one that could potentially go out on his own after working with you and Cheryl, I was thinking back to when I played baseball in college. And my freshman year, I was mentored by an upperclassman by the name of Joe Sandrini, who ended up going on to play with the Pirates in their minor league system. And I remember folks talking about the fact that some people were very good at doing it, and other people were very good at teaching it, and some people were good at both. So what's different on your end about just going out every day and doing your job and training horses and then teaching somebody to go and do your job? What's different there, Ken?
Well, the main thing you got to teach them is patience, because you got to be patient with a lot of horses, you know, a lot of different horses. So I try to teach him that, you know, every horse has his own little quirks that we have to work through, and teaching him has not been a hard process, because he catches on quick. So.
Well, that's wonderful, and it would certainly be great to see Joel Martinez's name in the program one day, which I know we will after he finishes his internship with you, Ken. Let's do this. Let's walk back to the beginning. And we'll talk more about Boca Boy, I'm sure, as we move throughout the program and some of the other top horses you've had. But let's walk back to the beginning and tell me where trainer Ken Weinbaugh ended up first becoming interested in horses and horse racing.
Well, I've been around horses all my life. Even as a young kid, I used to show quarter horses and Appaloosas with my father. And then my father used to train all the way back into the late 40s, early 50s at Exarban and La Mesa Park in New Mexico and Oakland Park. And so it's always been in my blood. I started galloping when I was about 12 on the farm, and from my father, of course. And he's the one who taught me. So that is kind of like hand-me-down stuff, you know. So, I've learned a lot through my father, Harvey Weinbaugh, and it's been just been. I started probably training when I actually got out of high school in 1981.
Oh, wow.
I think I got my assistant trainer's license. Mm-hmm. And then I got my trainer's license in 84. And I win my first race. My first race ever, I win with a horse called Get On Board. And he was an old classy horse. I had an old bow that we worked on every day. And we only had about five horses, me and my father, so... It was back then I had to do all the work and gallop the horses. And so that's how I got started.
Yeah, I went back and looked at your dad's resume before we did the program, and I noticed that he saddled 56 winners in his career, but he had some horses that were, I would call them more hard knockers than anything else. Is that the right way to say it?
Yes, they were always hard knockers. We were more of a claiming family. You know, we claimed horses and try to win back with them and fix their little problems, because that's what we had to do. We were just working on doing it on our own. So that when you start something on your own, and you start with claiming horses, you go in trying to know you're going to have to fix some problems usually. So we got very good at doing them up and getting them done up right, and fixing their needs, whatever they needed, to get them back to win back, yeah.
So many trainers have come on this show over the years, Ken, and they've told me that their parents, even though they were involved in horse racing, really wanted to see them do something else. They wanted them to go to college or, get a degree, do something outside of horse racing. And then when they got older, they could make their own decision as to what they wanted to do. It sounds like your dad was in the camp of, hey, if you want to follow in my footsteps, here's what you're going to have to do, but you can do it. Is that right?
Right. Well, he was always trying to push, and back in the, when I was a sophomore in high school, I was wrestling and I was athlete back then. I was probably weighing about 115 pounds. And he kept saying, no, you can't, because I was always wanting to be a jockey. I wanted to be a jockey, you know. He said, no, let's finish school then. If you want to do it, you can do it. So he kind of kept me in school at that time. So he was hoping that I would probably do something else. But then he seen it writing on the wall that I was going to be a trainer.
Wow, you didn't mind the early mornings? Even as a young kid like that, you didn't care about the early mornings and all those requirements to be a trainer?
See, you know what? I've always been the early morning person. I guess it was because he was, and there was never a time that I would rather say, "Oh, I'll roll over and go back to sleep." And I was going, "Let's go," you know.
I'll ask you later about your greatest moment as a trainer, but how about your greatest moment as a high school wrestler? What do you remember about that?
Well, I wasn't a great wrestler, but I was a pretty decent wrestler. I wrestled all through high school. And, I finished first or second in the conference a couple times. So I was lucky. I was like the horses. I was a hard knocker.
Yeah, it sounds like you were pretty good. Was that the only sport outside of horse racing that you followed when you were in high school, or were there other sports that you liked too?
No, that was the only sport. In fact, when my son was young. I ended up coaching him, and I was training horses during the morning, and I'd go in the afternoons, and the days that we weren't running horses, I was coaching the wrestling team for Hersher High School in Hersher, Illinois.
When on earth did you find time to sleep?
Sleep is overrated.
Trainer Ken Weinbaugh with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ken, talk about that part of being a horse trainer, because that's something that your average fan doesn't pay attention to. They see you at the racetrack in the afternoon, and they'll maybe see you around the racetrack in the morning, but that balance of family and work, how are you able to balance those two things, or were you able to when you were raising your son?
No, it was always a family first thing. So we were always early morning, got done, and one of us would stay and feed in the afternoon, the other one would go home and take care of the kids, or you know, if they needed something from or at school, we would, you know, we'd always do that first. You know, that the family was always first, school was always first. So but the early morning was never a problem. We always got up early, got them to school, got the horses taken care of, and got to training them, you know.
How many children do you have?
I have two kids. I have a boy he's studying to be a veterinarian right now, and I have a daughter that's 23 that's studying to be a vet tech right now.
Oh, wow. Equine veterinarian?
Yeah, actually, she's working for a small animal clinic right now, and he's going to St. George University in Grenada to become a veterinarian.
You must be very proud. Those are two great careers, and I wish them both the best as they move forward. Did they ever consider working as a trainer or an assistant trainer with you and your wife, Cheryl?
Well, they thought about it, but they were both smarter than most of us, so they figured school was the best way for them. So, but they love the animals, and it's not like I think either one of them would love to be a trainer too. Besides, and knew their career like we did when we were growing up. But they understand that they gotta make a living too, and they picked out a couple careers that they love. You know, just working with animals. So.
How about your wife, Cheryl? Where did the two of you meet? Was it a racetrack romance?
Well, no. Actually, that's another story. I actually knew her from eighth grade in junior high. We were in the same class. I didn't actually know of her very good, just that I knew her. And then I found out that she lived down the street, down the road from me at a livery stable. And her brother started getting into the horse racing, and that's actually how we met, because I knew her brother for a long time, because he was a couple years older than I was, and we were really good friends, and he introduced me to his sister, and that's how everything got started.
Wow, so did you end up bringing her into the training side of things, or was it the other way around?
Well, she was always grooming for her brother at the time, and then I brought her into the training part of it myself. Yeah.
Okay. And now you get to work for her every day.
Yeah. Now I get to work for her every day. Yes. Yeah.
You told me in that interview we did back in early February, I asked you about that, what it's like to have your wife as your boss. And I think I said that every married man in America can relate to that question, but you said it works beautifully. You've got a system and it works, and you're having a lot of success and a lot of fun.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. When we first got married, I was, like I said, we had a few horses, and then there was a job opening in on the gate. So I started working the gate, and I've been working. I actually worked that in the afternoons for 30 years. So, and then she would train the horses, and I'd go help her out. I'd get out most of the horses most of the time, and then we discuss things about the horses. So it worked out beautifully for my long, you know, still working out great.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it is, and still having success at a very high level. Do you ever have a conversation, Ken, where it's, you know, you kind of see her doing something with a horse, or she sees you doing something with a horse and thinks that maybe it should be done a little bit differently. Do you ever have that conversation with each other?
Oh, there's always a conversation a couple times. Usually it's just once a month or once a week or something like that. But there's always one horse that, you know, your opinions differ. But we work it out. We get work. We meet in the middle somewhere.
Yeah. So how does the business aspect of it work when you're both going at it for the same goal? You're both training, you know, all of the stable of horses. And even though you said it wasn't a big stable, how does that the business aspect work when the two of you are working together, trying to achieve that same goal?
Well, the business aspects actually works pretty good. So she takes care of all the billing and stuff like that, and I take care of all the employees, and we get everything situated where, you know, who's doing what, and we keep it all pretty straight.
What makes her such a good horsewoman?
She's very patient with horses. That's one reason, and she really loves them. So I think that makes her mostly the main part of why she's such a good horsewoman. Is that she is horse first with her. Is there's never a race first. It's horse first.
How about you? What do you think makes you a successful horse person too, Ken?
Well, I care a lot about them, and I make sure they're feeling good, eating good, and healthy, and properly fit. So I think that's what makes me a good horseman.
You know, we talked.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was saying we talked earlier. You know, about the fact that Boca Boy was looking to give you and Cheryl your first greatest stakes win as a trainer,
yeah.
And that's something that I know you would love to add to your resume. How much do you want to see that on your resume?
I'd like to see it right. I would love to see it. And because, you know, I think that's the only thing that we're lacking is a greatest stakes win. We've had two seconds and a third, and the third was beating two noses. I mean, it was just that close. So. And that was by a horse named Hatash, and that was early in 2013 when we first took over the horses for Mr. Fishbein. Mm-hmm. And a horse named Francois. He ran second in the Hashin Cup, and he just got caught at the wire. He actually just made the lead, and the horse come through on a rail, but there was like three across. My horse snuck through in the rail and beat him on by a nose, right at the wire. So we've been close to winning the graded race, and I'd love to see that pop up on her Equibase thing when it happens.
The
graded stakes winner. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, because when you go to Equibase and you see Cheryl Weinbaugh, you see multiple graded stakes placed trainer, and you would love to see that. That's a graded stakes winning trainer for sure.
Yes, that's a big improvement, you know.
You're talking with trainer Ken Weinbaugh.
Everybody does the Equibase now. I mean, that's the first thing they want to look at is, you know, what's the stats on this trainer, and what's, you know, has she ever won, you know, the big races yet, you know. So that,
well,
I think
funny.
A graded stakes would be a big shot in the arm.
Yeah, it's so funny you bring that up, because that was a question I was thinking of asking you earlier with the way that the game is today. And when you were training with your father, Harvey, and learning from him, is the game different now and the training profession different now than it was back when your dad was around?
Oh, well, I believe it is, yeah. A lot of it now is everything. Everybody wants a high percentage trainer, you know. It's not who, you know, how many win now. It's you know how good your percentage is. You know, it's not that they care about, you know, how good are you training the horse. You know, actually nowadays.
Yeah, I wonder at what point that actually changed, because it used to be all about just being a horseman and taking care of horses. But I guess back in the day, you really didn't have the super stables that we have today either, with people like Todd Pletcher and Steve Asmussen and, you know, Bob Baffert and Chad Brown that have so many horses they're taking care of. It was a little bit different dynamic back then, wasn't it?
Yes, there was. It's a big change, you know. You know, and they micromanage with a lot of assistant trainers and stuff like that. And the other old guys, they used to always have it right there with them, you know, at all times. You know, Richard Hazelden always had a big stable that he managed by himself, you know, just himself. And, you know, a lot of trainers around there, Jim Levitch that I knew back in the day, you know, he always had his own horses that he took care of. And you know, it's a big difference now.
How have you and Cheryl been able to remain in business with such a small stable?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
How have you and Cheryl been able to remain in business for such a long time with a smaller stable?
Well, it's a tough game sometimes. Sometimes you have to put the brakes on and reboot. but until you find the greatest owner in the world, it's hard to put things together. I mean, you got to do it all on your own if you can. But until you find that one owner that fits you perfect, like Mr. Fishbine and us, I think it's a tough job, you know.
Yeah, it certainly can be. Ken Weinbaum, my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Ken, we're coming up on the break. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll talk more about some of the horses that stand out to you and to your wife, Cheryl, and we'll talk more about some of the owners that have helped you along the way. We'll do that next. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fasic Tipton is bringing the heat to Miami with the Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale of selected two-year-olds in training. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale will be held on March 31st after the Florida Derby over Gulfstream Park's dirt racetrack. The sale has a history of producing the sport's very best horses, including last year's Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Nadal, as well as top horses Bellafina, Dona Veloce, Yapin, and Share the Ride. You will find no higher concentration of quality in any two-year-old sale in 2021. The Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 31st at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be? Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2021. Take advantage of competitive purse structures with huge bonuses for Ontario breds and a Woodbine backstretch equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track, a 7 furlong turf training track, a 2 furlong sand ring, and a 1/2 mile European jogging path. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile EP Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 17th. Follow us at Woodbine TV on social media and reach out to our team at woodbine.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Less than a quarter of a mile to come. Boca Boy has the lead. He's not home yet. Here, Breeze on by on the far outside, and Gatsby is between horses. From fourth and Hercules, and they turn in. It's Boca Boy who's still the target. Breeze on by tries to reach him late. From third and Gatsby, less than a 16th to go. Boca Boy trying to get home. Breeze on Drive trying to pick him up. Breeze on by is not going to get by as Boca Boy is digging in. And Boca Boy for Kenny Fishbane to get the upset in the winning a length and a half in the end. Second was Breeze on by. Third was Cezanne. Fourth, Gatsby in 146-1.
That's Gulfstream announcer Pete Aiello with the call of the FTBOA Florida Sire In Reality Stakes at Gulfstream back on September 26th of last year. Nobody got by Boca Boy that day. He can be a tough out when he's loose on the lead turning for home. And he is as talented as they come for trainers Cheryl Weinbaugh and her husband Ken, who is my special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. If you missed any of the first half of the program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. And, of course, be sure to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. Well, Ken, that stretch call has to bring back some pretty good memories for you. I know we talked about Boca Boy at the beginning of the show tonight, and you talked about how special he was and how special you still think he can be. But that In Reality Stakes, boy, did he put it all together that day.
Yeah, every time I hear that call, I get a little choked up. So it was quite a thrill, that's for sure.
He is owned by a gentleman by the name of Ken Fishbein, who has been very good to you. You touched on him at the end of the first half of the program, and you said, you know, it's great when you have owners that, you know, kind of gel with you. And I'm paraphrasing, of course, but Ken Fishbein has been very, very good to you.
Yes, he has been. In 2013, I was working for a man named Charlie Bettis, and he passed away. Suddenly. So in June, me and Cheryl had a meeting with Mr. Fishbein because I knew the horses, and so I introduced him to Cheryl, and that's how we ended up getting Mr. Fishbein to come with us.
Wow. And it's so important.
And, we took over a nice stable, but I think we've done really good for him.
Yeah, I think you have. And it's so important to have owners that share the same philosophy as you, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, he doesn't say much. He comes out once in a while, enjoys the horses, and he loves to go up and watch them race. That's the main thing he really loves. So, and he's never hard to please. He lets us do what we have to do. And he never seems mad about nothing. So everything that we can do for the horses, he understands that we're doing our best for them. Yeah.
Well, when you look up Kenneth Fishbein on Equibase and you see some of his top horses that he has been privileged to own, and I say privileged because it's very difficult in this sport to come across horses that are as good as some of the ones that he's had. Boca Boy, currently his second best horse in terms of earnings. His top one is a horse by the name of Francois, who I'm sure you're extremely familiar with.
Yes. We took over Francois after Charlie passed away, and he almost won the Hessian Cup for us. He won a lot of allowance races at Arlington Park. He loved the synthetic. He loved the turf. He loved the dirt. He's been a great horse. I think he's got don't quote me on this, but I think he's had 17 wins. So, and I think he made like $300,000. And Charlie Bettis had claimed him for $7,500. And he went the other than with him, and then he come back and went. He went three in a row with him. One was a stake. One was a straight line stake for 3-year-olds. So he claimed him as a 3-year-old, and then we picked him up the next year.
Wow, such a special story, and it's great when you get a horse like that that comes into your barn, and you can actually watch them develop and improve a little bit, isn't it?
Yes, and he ran to a ripe old age of 7 or 8. He was quite a workhorse. He was quite an iron horse. In fact, he ran second in the Iron Horse Claiming Crown at here at Gulfstream twice.
Wow. Well, tough horse, really tough horse. Those horses are tough to come by, but when you get them, they certainly are fun to be around. Let's talk a little bit more about your background, Ken. You talked about working with your dad and learning from your dad, and then eventually meeting Cheryl, and then the two of you are doing this together, which is so cool. Your first win as a trainer came back in 1984. You mentioned the name of the horse earlier, Get On Board. What do you remember about that day?
I remember it was really cold. It was like the end of December or 1st of January at Hawthorne. And it was so exciting to see him come from off the pace and win that day. It was, I don't know, I was overjoyed. You know how it is to win the first one.
Yeah. How long did you have to wait to get that first win?
Actually, I didn't have to wait that long. I took over my trainer's license like that November, And I think he was the first horse that I raced. He wins first time out for me.
Now, it should always be that easy, right?
Right, right. I thought I got the world by the tail. Yeah, it was. It's been a lot of fun.
It's funny. I just pulled up his name on Equibase as well. Get on board. He's a Florida bred, and it shows that he won 22 times, and the last trainer of record was the great Dale Baird, who is the all-time winningest trainer in the history of racing.
Yes, he was starting to get, his bow was starting to get a little hot, so my father decided we better sell him, you know. And he was a workhorse. He was an iron horse himself. He every year he would win three or four races. So it was like he was like money in the bank for us, you know, us poor people that were just working on claiming horses at the time, you know, back in the early 80s. The old retired Sportsman's Park. He would win second time out because he had a bow on him. We wouldn't work him a lot. We'd only work him like one time, and my dad would run him, and he'd run like fourth or fifth the first time out, and then the next time he'd come, he was like, going to the bank. He was going to win the next out.
At what point did you realize, Ken, that you could be successful as a horse trainer?
Well, I always thought I could be successful with a horse trainer because I was, you know, I just loved training horses, and I thought, wow, this is what I was made to do right here.
Well, it is, and it's something that you've been doing now for well over three decades, I guess approaching four decades now, and it's a lifelong passion. It really has to be. You also spent time working for a gentleman by the name of Glenn Hild, who trained several Graded Stakes winners. He won more than 2,100 races in his career. Tell me about your time working with Glenn.
I worked for Glenn in like the early 90s, early 92 or something, 93. And we had a lot of good horses. One year at Arlington, we won 25 races. I thought that was this was the easiest game in the world working for Glenn. He was a great guy to work for. I was galloping between 10 or to 15 a day for him. And I thought it was, man, this is a racket. This is what I meant to do right here. And Glenn was one of the smartest, hardworkingest guys that you ever around. He would train his own horses. He would chew his own horses. He would rub four or five every day just himself. He was like a little workhorse. He's a great guy.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what made him such a good trainer, but I think you just touched on it. It was that dedication and that work ethic, right?
Oh yeah, you know, one year we had about 40 horses at Arlington Park, and he would chew every one himself. He was something to behold. After he got done training horses, he started chewing his own, and he'd chew them all. And he knew everything about every one of them horses. And I think that's what I picked up on, is because, you know, he knew what they had wrong with them and how to fix them. So
you were
so
with
I think I learned a lot from him.
Yeah, you were with him when a horse named Dust on the Bottle won the Hawthorne Gold Cup in 2000, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. Yeah, how cool was that?
Oh, I think he would have won it twice, but he got injured right before the one. He won it in 2099. I think he would have won it that year. He was running so great for a jockey named Mark Guidry.
Sure.
I think he would have won it the year before, except he got injured right before the race and come back the next year and did win it because he was such a great – he was a great closer.
He had another horse that won five Graded Stakes for him by the name of Silver Survivor. Do you remember that horse?
I don't remember him, but I my father knew of him, and you know, back when I was working for my father, he was a great horse. That horse was he was really a good horse.
So, do you find that there are things that when you were working with Glenn, there are things that you learned that you're still incorporating into your operation today?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He always told me, if they ate good, we could train them good. And if they didn't eat good, we can't train them. You know, we have to train them lightly or not at all that day. So if a horse would leave feeding in the tub, he wanted to know why, you know. And he'd adjust his feed program. He'd have a feed program that, you know, he wanted everybody clean enough, every horse to clean up their horses, you know, their feed at night. So that way we could keep on training. So that was one of his nicks that he believed in. And I think I still believe in it today. If a horse doesn't eat, he can't, you know, he's, something's not right. You know, he's not feeling right. He's not doing right. Something's not correct. So if we get him to eat good and be healthy, then we can train him like we want, you know.
Ken, I said earlier in the show that when you joined me in early February on our Equine Forum show, that I could tell that there's something different about your voice when you talk about horse racing, that passion, that enthusiasm. It's not a job. It is a lifestyle. It is a passion, and you can hear it. It comes through when you talk. What else do you think you might be doing if you never found horse racing?
I'm not sure what I'd be doing. I'd be around the horses somewhere. If I wasn't a thoroughbred trainer, you know, like I said, I showed horses, quarter horses. I'd be around horses some way in my life, you know. You know, even if I had to run a livery stable, I think I'd be around horses, you know.
Yeah, he is passionate about it for sure. He is trainer Ken Weinbaugh, working alongside his wife Cheryl. They've been doing that for more than 30 years now, and they have raised two children, and it is all come together for them. And now their Boca boy is hoping to find some way to get into the Kentucky Derby. Maybe it's the Lexington Stakes at Keeneland. If not, then there are other Triple Crown races and other graded stakes races up the road too. So a lot of ways that that you'll hear from Ken and Cheryl Weinbaugh. Ken, you had an incident in 2019, and an incident is a gross understatement. You suffered a stroke on December 21st of that year, left you partially paralyzed on your left side. You told me that now you just have a little paralysis left in your left foot, which is wonderful news. Boy, you look back on that day and that time in your life, and you think, geez, you know, we could have lost everything right then and there, but thank God you didn't.
Yeah, it could have been a devastating. That's an understatement. You know, if you can't get there to the barn and see your horses every day, it's really bad. You know, you get depressed and everything else. But thank goodness everything worked out, and my wife and her assistant Joel took care of business and got everybody. When we had just shipped out everything to Gulf Stream Park and they got everything settled down and going, and with all the family prayers and stuff like that, I come out of it. I had a guy named Richard DePass, which is an agent for, he was an agent for Luis Saez.
Yeah, I know him well.
Called me when I was in the hospital. He said, Kenny, whatever you do, don't give up. You get up and walk as much as you can. You'll come out of it. He goes, I had the same thing when I was younger. He goes, and here I am. I'm back to normal. He goes, whatever. He goes, don't get depressed. Get after it. Get busy. He said. He said, you're a horseman. You can take it. And thank God he was right.
Yeah, spectacular. Just I know Richie well. I've known him since I worked at Keeneland years ago, even before I started on radio. And, yeah, really good guy, and I'm glad that he took the time to reach out to you. People like that, Ken, as you're going through something like you went through, boy, how much does that help in the recovery process, just knowing that other people are in your corner like that?
Oh, you just can't believe how many people reached out and touched, you know, and called me and talked to me about it, you know, that everything was going to be all right.
Yeah. How long was the recovery process?
Well, it took me 2 months before I could move anything on my left side. And then about 4 months, I was walking just with a cane. So, and then with 6 months, I started pushing the cane to the side and started walking. So about wow. 6 months, I started getting down where I could see the horses again. And now it's been oh, my goodness, so good.
Yeah, I can imagine that
morning,
first day.
I get up at 3:30 every morning just to get there.
Yeah, that first day back at the barn had to just be so emotional and just be so unbelievable for you.
Oh, it was so great. It was so great. You wouldn't believe. You know, I had so many here that I hadn't seen in a while. And then we had claimed some new ones, so that was fun getting to go over the new ones with Joel and seeing all the new horses and some of the old horses that were still there. It's been a ride, that's for sure.
So often when people experience something like that, Ken, they'll talk about the fact that they now view life differently. They view their profession a little bit differently. Is that true for you too?
Oh yeah, I was always glad to be here, but you know, being after knowing that happened, just being able to do what you love is great. You know, you can't put words on it.
Yeah. He's a special man. He's Ken Weinbaugh, and he's my guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ken, who are some of the horses that, when you think back on your career, that for whatever reason you're always going to remember?
Well, like I said, I'm going to remember the first one, which was Get On Board. And I'm going to remember a little horse that I had. It was a little handicap horse. It won two handicaps for me at a place called Belmore Park. His name was Walbird. And then I'm going to remember a horse called Francois. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to remember a horse called Hattash. He was a great horse for us. And you can't leave out Boca Boy. He's at the top of the list now.
What do you think your greatest training job may have been? Maybe a horse that people said, look, this horse can't run. He's got no shot to be a good racehorse, or she has no chance. And you started working with them, and all of a sudden you just saw them get better and better and better. Do you have a story like that?
Well, I believe the horse named Hattash was one of the better training that we did. He was running for like 25 and, a cheaper allowance raises. And he just kept getting better and better and better. And got him up to the Washington Park handicap. Run second the first time, got beat a neck. And then the next year, run third, got beat two noses. And I think keeping him sound for all them races for like 2 or 3 years was probably the best training that we'd done with a horse. Well, and Francois, you could never leave Francois. That was a good training experience too.
Yeah, and it's when you get a horse, I've had trainers tell me they look at themselves as coaches or teachers, and when you get a horse that finally figures it out, that has to be so rewarding.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, Aunt Tash had bad knees. And nursing and keeping him healthy and keeping the knees sound was a project every day, but it was well worth it.
Let me throw another name at you. How about Bordini?
Oh, Bordini he's a great horse. He was actually the first one I ever bought out of the sale for Mr. Fishbein. He was my first 2-year-old purchase that I thought was going to be the Derby horse, and I believe that he would have been probably our best contender, except he had a bleeding problem. He always would bleed a little bit and kind of didn't shorten his career, but it limited his career. In fact, he's still winning. He won last year at Hawthorne in early December.
Yeah, that's great. It's great to see a horse like that that just continues to battle through everything and continue to find the winner's circle some way. When you go to a sale, Ken, and you're picking out these young horses, what are some of the key things that you're looking for?
Well, I'm actually looking for something that's going to grow up to be a bigger, better, you know, stockier looking horse, and with a little size, with a nice neck and a nice shoulder, a good throat latch, you know, nice hindquarters. You know, that's what I go to look at.
What's
nice
more important?
And straight and sound.
Yeah, what's more important, pedigree or a horse that looks like an athlete?
Well, I always like the athletic horses, even though, you know, pedigree does help. Like I said, when I sent Joel down to look at Boca Boy, the reason I really liked Boca Boy was his paper. His mother had produced like four other two-year-old winners that went as two-year-olds. And so, you know, I told Joel if he looks like he's athletic, you know, and looks like a nice shoulder and neck on him, to let me know, and let's try to buy him.
Yeah, he's trainer Ken Weinbaugh, and he is my special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Ken, if you could take one day and spend it with another trainer, any trainer in the sport, outside of your wife, who would it be?
Well, I would spend it with my father, Harvey, because he loved the game as much as I did.
That's a great answer. That's a fantastic answer. And you can tell that passion comes through when you talk to Ken Weinbaugh. Ken, we're down to the final 4 minutes of the program. It has flown by, and I can't thank you enough for your time. I always like to end the program by asking trainers to tell me a little something about them that we haven't touched on yet, maybe some other hobbies that you might have or interests outside of horse racing, anything that comes to mind.
Well, I was up to midnight last the other night watching collegiate wrestling. So I would say the only thing that I would maybe love more than horse racing was watching collegiate wrestling or high school wrestling, because it was another one of my passions.
Do you have a favorite school that you cheer for?
Well, I cheer for Illinois most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you cheer for them in the NCAA basketball tournament?
Well, I did, but Loyola put it on them.
Yeah, although I guess if you're going to lose to Loyola Chicago isn't a bad thing.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. No.
Yeah, very happy
Sister
for
Mary
those
had,
kids.
Miss Sister Mary had them primed and ready to win.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ken, listen, it has been just a delight to hear your story. What's the future hold for Ken and Cheryl Weinbaugh? Where do you want to see things go from here?
Well, I think I've got a couple potential three-year-olds here in the barn that hasn't even raced yet, that hopefully we can bring them to light here pretty soon. They're getting pretty close to running. So I don't know if we could ever get them ready for the Derby or not, but there's a couple that I really like, so.
Well, hope springs eternal, right?
When you get a future.
When you got a good horse in the barn, it's easy to get up every morning and easy to get out there. And I know that if they have any potential at all, that you'll be able to draw it out of them. And Ken, can't thank you enough for the visit. Really appreciate it. And all the best to you and to Cheryl moving forward. And let's hope we see Boca Boy back in the winner's circle before too long.
Thank you very much, Mike.
All right, great stuff. That is Ken Weinbaugh here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Yeah, just you think about that story, and I was so excited when Ken agreed to come on the program here, because spending 10 minutes with him on Equine Forum back on February 6th was just really scratching the surface. There was so much more to his story that I wanted to talk with him about, so I was happy that he took the time to do it. But, you know, he working alongside of his wife Cheryl for more than 30 years, and really grinding it out with not big numbers, a smaller stable. And you heard him say there were times you had to pump on the brakes a little bit. And they're raising two kids. I mean, think about the pressure that puts on you when you don't have huge numbers of horses, and they're not winning greatest stakes races every single weekend. It's a lot, but they have persevered, and they persevere because of one thing, love of the horse and love of the game. Fantastic story. And again, my thanks to Ken Weinbaugh for being with me on Trainer Talk here today. If you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast there. You can also do it on Apple Podcasts, and you can follow us on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk.